6-8 months here. He's been a lot of help to me and a lot of help to a lot of people, but with no more from me, I'll let him tell his story. We'll give you Norman Young. Norman?
Okay, thank you, Don. With all of that information we've had given to us, some of you gentlemen have to go to work tomorrow. I think you might as well start now. Hey, yes. I have a hard time getting myself to come down to earth in an Alcoholics Anonymous because of what some people have said is progress. And I was taught in the beginning a lot about Anonymous. Yeah, they don't have anything like Anonymous anymore. Let's open this meeting with the use of the Serenity Prayer that is commonly called an AA prayer, but that's also false. It was used by Greeks even before the Bible. So you had ought to know it and you had ought to apply it. Shall we repeat the Serenity Prayer altogether? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Well, I'll thank your chairman and your group for inviting me here to visit with you about my understanding of the Alcoholics Anonymous program. And part of it you don't like, why, throw out your window and don't take it. Any part you do like, all right, keep. And I'll argue about it, that's wonderful. But boy, there's nothing like a bunch of drunks arguing, boy. Oh, boy, they love it, you know. When I go to these Alcoholics Anonymous meetings and I stand before the biggest bunch of liars in the world, saying, damn alcoholics, boy, can they lie. You don't want to admit it, but you do, you know. You go home and can hardly sit on the chair and your wife says, you've been drinking? Well, I had 2 beers. What about the 4,000 you had in between, you know? And then they get up and they tell you some alcoholic stories. Gee, God, I've heard some awful ones. Oh, yeah. Some guy drank gasoline to buttermilk. Now, you know that's a damned lie. Make you sick, but it wouldn't make you drunk. Some guy drank 4 quarts one morning. That's another lie. After 4 doubles, you don't know what you're doing. Oh, God, we lie. And that's what we learn in Alcoholics Anonymous. We learn to shut that off and learn to be honest. I've had the privilege of doing some things that you folks never will be able to do because of time. I knew in person Dr. Bob and Bill, been in their homes, Henrietta Sibeling and Lois Wilson and so on, drank coffee with them and them. So all I've got out of the Alcoholics Anonymous way of life came from the foundation that they gave me. I've never read a word in the AA program, and I've done without drink. And that shows that you can do it, but I don't think you had ought to. A lot of good things for you to read. But I remember Dr. Bob, when the first time I ever heard him lead a meeting, he made use of sentences out of the good book. A lot of us are a little fearful about something that we think is religion, but that's not true. This is not a religious program at all. He said, be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, and keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. Well, what did that do to me? I'll tell you. I have a thinking problem. Mind, heart. I have a thinking problem, and that was it. And some more things that I've taken from them, they had two people get together, talk about stop drinking, and they had a few steps handed in, several of them, and then they had some arguments about different things. Some came from the Oxford Movement. Oxford Movement is a group out of England, Oxford University, Oxford Street, and so on. They would have one form of public confession. They'd gather around the room and they'd say, well, I stole $10 last week. Well, we'll pray for you and forgive you. Now don't do it again. If I got drunk last week, well, we'll pray for you and forgive you. Don't do it again. Now, the Osprey movement is built on four cardinal principles. They call them absolutes. They are unselfishness, honesty, purity, and love. Henrietta Slaverman brought them over to this little group as they studied in the home of T. Henry Williams and his lovely wife, who just passed away a couple of months ago, age of 92. Then they kind of separated. They got some steps, and they had what they call four absolutes or cardinal principles, and some people said it was just impossible to be absolutely honest. But they are the cornerstones of Alcoholics Anonymous, whether it's impossible or not, so let's keep them. Let's use them. They've done more good for me than all the rest of the writings in the world. Four little words. Well, and they had some things written and so on, and they had a remarkable man, brilliant, newspaper man out of England, former Oxford man, Australian, so on. His name was Jim Scott. He ran a second-hand bookstore, and he was in this new way of life. And he edited these steps, and then they argued somewhat about a name, and they come up with Alcoholics Anonymous. And he gave a good definition of it. Naturally, we didn't want to put everybody's name out, and we still had not ought to do that. I have no right to go down the street and say, hey, I didn't know that Joe Bill was such a drunk until I saw him in an AA meeting. I don't have the right to do that. I don't have the right to go to an AA meeting and stand up here and say, you know, there are doctors in the groups, there are scientists in the groups, there are... No, I don't have the right to do that. All I have to do is take care of me. So Jim Scott, he said, the real, true meeting, as far as we alcoholics are concerned, of the word anonymous is Christ or God or good is unknown to you until you admit a defeat. And in our case, it's alcohol. Study that out and see. Well, there are a few people and they got together and they had what they call meetings. Well, now they have, I call it a bill of fare. They read off their meetings for a month ahead or something. I don't know. Used to be they'd sit there, there'd be 25 or 50 people. Hey, get up here and talk. And somebody said, well, I didn't prepare. You never prepared to get drunk, did you, you bastard? Get up here and talk. So that's the way it was. That's the way it was. And that was awful interesting to me, and that's where I learned. So what they do, they stand up here and tell them a little bit about their drinking career. Now, this is interesting to some people. I do it because I know that the alcoholics are gossipers. Boy, do they love to gossip. Now, tomorrow, down at the shop or at the grocery store or someplace, you'll hear some, you know that band that slipped under the bridge or two, and they'll talk about me and they'll let you alone, see? So, give them something to talk about. A little gossip, you know, that's good for you. But we study the individual, and that's what I want you to do a little while, study me. And then I'll turn around and I'll try to study the whole, make up the whole thing. There are people say they drank for many, many reasons, and these are always interesting to me. Drank because I was Irish. I know a lot of Irish people drink, and they're not alcoholics. Drank because I was German. I know a lot of Germans who drink beer, and they're not alcoholics. And they're Italians who say, I drank a lot of wine. A lot of friends of mine are Italians, and they drink wine, but they're not alcoholics. Well, they figure out some other reason why they drink. And I think each one of us have a reason why we drink. Now, to see why... Maybe I can shatter some people's belief. I came from a family of good church people. There's a big difference I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous between church people and so-called Christians. My mother and family were, our father would have family worship. They'd bless the food and read the Bible, go to church and sing and teach a class and pray and so on. Yet my mother would stick her head out of a window and condemn the neighbors for things my mother didn't think were just right. Then my dad would attend that service, go to church, teach a class, the superintendent of a Sunday school, yet he would cheat in his business in order to make an extra dollar. They were dry people. They never tasted alcohol in all their lives. They were dry. But they were not sober. And that's the beautiful part about my understanding of the Alcoholics Anonymous program. I am not learning how to quit drinking. Well, that's no trick at all. If you can't quit any other way, cut your damn throat. You'll quit. It's no trick to quit drinking. I quit drinking 52,361 times because I was broke. But sobriety is the way we think. There's only one little sentence in all of the Alcoholics Anonymous writings, all the books and all the pamphlets, only one little sentence that has anything to do with alcohol. The first step, we admit we're powerless over it. That's it. The rest has something to do with sobriety. And that's what we study. Now, I haven't been sober since I've been in this room. It's impossible for me to be sober more than a minute at a time. I have a hard time controlling this mind of mine. And the reason I wasn't sober, somebody stepped on my foot back there. I said, I'd have cut your damn throat, you bastard. I wasn't sober, but I'm not drinking. And so the people, when they start to talk, they'll say, I am a recovered alcoholic. Some silly statement that I don't have any use for, but that's what they are, you know. 1908 is when I took my first drink and when I got drunk. 1939 is when I had my last drink, and I had been drunk for about 11 months previous. I have not had a drink of alcohol taken intentionally in my system since January 28, 1939. And I'll repeat, I have not been sober all that time. And I never will be sober all the time. Yes, I get the desire to drink, and I learned that from Dr. Bob. My body always wants to drink. But my mind says no. I have to study a family. I have two brothers and two sisters. They never tasted alcohol in all their lives. I am the alcoholic in the family. I have a sister a couple years younger. She's a trained registered nurse. But she is diabetic. Now, we had the same parents. We ate the same food. We went to the same church. Went to the same day school, played the same games, and had the same friends. Why am I an alcoholic and she isn't? Why is she a diabetic and I'm not? I don't know and I don't care. I am never going to waste any of my time trying to go back and find out why I'm an alcoholic. I don't care whether it's because my dad wasn't a drinker or my mother was. I don't care. I don't care whether they dropped me on the floor when I was born or not. I don't care. I know I am. And from here on is what I've got to do. Do something about it. Of course, we have those lovely people who are various kinds of titles, psychologists and so on, and they try to get us to believe that we well, one very good word is a complex. Got a complex. Well, you was poor family, born in the ghetto. You was not blessed with enough money to get an education. You couldn't dance. You couldn't play football. You have complexes. That's a damn lie, too. I know a girl, and I've told this before, but it illustrates points. This girl was born into the world with bow legs. She had a couple of legs that could wrap right around the barrel. As a youngster, nobody else would play with her because she was bow-legged. They wouldn't jump rope with her, play jacks or anything. Nah, she's bow-legged. They made it insulted her, you know. She went on up to high school, and nobody would associate with her. They wouldn't have her go to any of the social affairs. She was bow-legged, poor thing. Got her up to the senior prom. Well, she mustered enough courage to go. A room such as this, you know. Poor bow-legged girl standing up against the wall. And there was a fellow there, probably something like me, and he had a bottle with him. Goes over to this poor wallflower. Now she's bow-legged. Have a drink of this bottle, huh? She took a drink, and one leg got scraped. Then she took another drink, and the other leg got scraped. You know, she danced herself into AA 17 years later. Now she's still bow-legged. Yeah. Well, I want them to answer the question, where did her complex go? Huh? Where did it go? Well, that's true with all kinds of complexes. If you think you got one, throw it out the window. Now, we got a disease known as alcoholism. Well, I drank all through my early life. It may not be all right for me to illustrate, too, the benefit of what we had in the beginning, and that was a doctor. Dr. Bob, a physician. And he had an awful lot to do with the development of this AA program. See, he was a physician. So he compared this disease to diabetes. Some people think this is a little silly, but it's a very good thing for you to think about. A person who has diabetes will go to a doctor and he will test your blood and say, well, it is too bad, but you're diabetic. Now, why? They don't know. They don't know why. Something to do with your pancreas or it gets mixed up with apple pie. But anyhow, you're diabetic. Now, you can have no more fats and no more sugars and no more this and no more that. And you must take your insulin not to be cured, no, but to keep well. They will never be cured. So our Dr. Bob said the same thing is true with the alcoholic. Except nobody in the world can tell you you're an alcoholic except yourself. You have to decide that. Now, then you decide you're an alcoholic, and he also told us that in order to keep well, you must do like a diabetic, and that is take medicine. Their disease is physical. Ours is mental and spiritual. And ours is composed of three doses. First thing in the morning is to get your mind clear and make a contract with your understanding of a higher power. This is commonly called prayer or quiet time, whatever. You can read something if you want to, but make a contract with your understanding of a higher power. Like Dr. Bob said, God, you and I together could do without a drink today. And the second dose of medicine is because you've done that in the morning, you will be given the opportunity during the day when you need it the most. You will be tempted to lose your temper, to take a drink, to lie, cheat, steal. You'll be tempted. That is the time for you to forget yourself and go and help your fellow man. Not always sponsorship. Maybe you can help somebody down at the shop, drop his wrench. Maybe you can help him pick it up. Oh, you're going to lose some production. Production. What do you want? Production? Or do you want sobriety? Help your kids with their lessons. It's hard to tell. And then the third dose of medicine is the attendance to the Alcoholics Anonymous meetings and the attendance to them regular. And you don't go here to hear somebody tell a weird old drinking story, because they can make them up. There's a guy down at your higher penitentiary, and he'll write you the best lead you ever heard. Never took a drink in all his life, and he's in the pen, because he killed a couple of people. Yeah. No, you go to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings to partake of the power of the Spirit that's at work. Everybody that's in that meeting. You don't get it anyplace else in this world. You don't get it in a union meeting, in a lodge, in a church, a fraternity, no. And if you want to prove it sometime when you're at a meeting and it seems like there's a lull in it all, and take a look at the person alongside or across from you, look at the happiness and the peace and the contentment on that face. That's why we go to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. We don't got to learn to see who's sober, who got a divorce, who got a job, who got a raise, no. It's not our business. We're learning how to contact and live with our understanding of a higher power. And that's an alcoholic's lungs. Now, your doctor will tell you, the diabetic, if you don't take your medicine, you're going to maybe go into a diabetic coma. We will tell you the same thing. We will give you a foolproof guarantee that if you take your medicine that was prescribed by your sponsor, you will remain dry. But if you don't, you're going to have difficulty. And that is the beautiful part about it. God, I'm glad I'm not like my sister. You know, I can eat anything I want to. I don't have to run around and shoot myself with a great big needle. Hurts like heck. No, my medicine is beautiful to take. Well, in order to get here, you generally have to have somewhat of a drinking experience, career and so on. I drank. Like in high school, we had a teacher that gave us some alcohol in our chemistry class to perform experiments with. Well, I drank mine. The heck with any experiments they've done. Well, I wanted to read the law, and so I enrolled in night school, law school, went a couple of years. Then I wanted to travel and didn't have money, so I took a job as a salesman. I traveled all over the country. I worked for the Hershey Chocolate Company and sold candy all over. And now I've been in AA. I learned an awful lot about me. Yeah, I learned that I was going through what they call blackouts. And God, that was wonderful. Well, and I worked the northern part of New York State for a whole week, and I didn't know until I got paid. See, it was wonderful. I didn't know whether I had a cold or my feet hurt. I didn't know a thing. And it was a funny thing about I sold more merchandise and collected more money that week than I ever did before. Now, a portion of my mind was working. Yeah, I remember. They put me in a car down in the Southern Hotel in Columbus, set me back on a wheel, and I drove all the way to Cleveland. Don't ever remember leaving Columbus. A portion of my mind is working, but you can't depend on it. That's why we see these drunks going up the road and weaving around. A part of their mind is working. They know that there's a wheel in that car, and they know there's a pedal and a brake, but that's about all, but they go. Yeah, there's a part of their mind is breaking. Yeah, crazy bunch of idiots. I quit the gravel road and took a job in an office. Now, I'm 125 years of age, and I've already been arrested and been in jail once for being drunk and once for embezzlement and so on. I had a little bit of trouble with drink. That didn't bother me. What the heck? Other people go to jail, too. But I heard people say something about pity. What do they call it? Self-pity. First time I went to jail, I woke up somewhere in the neighborhood at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. I was laying on the floor, cold old cement floor, and I woke up and wondered where I am. And I found out, hey, look at the bars. Look at here, geez, I'm in jail. That's where I am. Yeah, I'm in jail. So here I started then with this stuff called pity. Here I am. I went to high school. I was president of the Y class. And then I was the best quarter miler on the track team. Everybody looked up to me as wonderful. Here, all those sweaters I won, look at me. Here I am in jail. I'm a jailbird. Some girl in the bunk, some fella in the bunk above me said, what the hell's the matter with you? Well, I was the best regarded young man in this whole town. I was. Did you know who my old man was? I said, no. Well, he said, he's Mr. A.E. Adams, and he owns the American Chico Company. He's worth $70 million, and I'm in jail because I'm drunk. Now go to bed, you son of a bitch. Well, I got out of jail. I was so ashamed that I wouldn't walk up the main street. I walked up the alley. Back. Oh, I was ashamed. I was, you know, I had self-pity. I was full of remorse. Hello, Davy. You know, it's wonderful. 6 months, you know, I was old, geez, I wouldn't go near town, near that jail. Oh, no, no, no. Well, something happened, but I got drunk and I landed in jail again. I did the same thing. I was ashamed. I walk up the alleys and so on. But this time it only lasted 7 months after I was arrested the first time. I got arrested 3 times in one day and didn't mind it a bit. Now, he didn't bother me. Well, I quit traveling the road, and I took a job in an office, and I was promoted very rapidly. Somebody also has said that this higher power, he blesses the alcoholic. They stand across the street and they never get hit. If they do get hit, they bounce back up and wouldn't get another drink anyhow. Very lucky, you know. Well, anyhow, I got an awful good job and I was promoted very rapidly. I was in the financial side of a great big company. So I got married and I bought a house and I paid for it. Bought my wife a car and I had a car. Brought to the city club and the country club. Looked at myself as a youngster and I said, maybe this won't last forever. So I bought a great big handful of insurance so I could retire at the age of 45 on a couple hundred dollars a month and so on and so forth. I'm powerless over economic conditions, too, because if I was when I was 45, I couldn't buy a short beard. got bawled out once in a while from the boss. Now, I didn't drink on the job, but I did after. That's what he didn't like. Your mouth gets awful slippery. Get around these places and the happy food drinks, and you start telling them how many checks we got floating in Pittsburgh and Cleveland and so on. Now, I have to cut it out. All right. I'm doing a good job. Done. Same thing was true at home, you know. Had the county treasurer and his wife come out to our house one night and go to play a game. It was kind of popular then and was known as 500. And of course, when you have what they call social drinking, the alcoholic, he always mixes the drink. The first one is a little cracked ice, a little ginger ale, about an ounce of whiskey, and you take it into the card table and serve it. Now, the alcoholic's nerves will go through an awful jolt. They'll sit there and they'll sip, and you'll say, Jesus Christ, drink that down, will you, so I can get one. Well, you'll stand it a little while, and then you'll drink yours down. You don't care what it is. Then you go out to where you got it, usually in the kitchen, and you get one of yours. Mine was a quart. Now, when I had a quart in me, I go into the card table. I'm ready to play. They're sitting there sipping on a little old ounce of whiskey. Can't get you knowing. I show you exactly what an alcoholic is, and if you don't know, he's a drinker with his feet firmly established in midair, and he does everything backwards, and that's exactly what I did. I threw him out, threw my wife out, and kept his wife. Now, that's the way the alcoholic works. Yeah. It sounds humorous, but that's awful. That's a terrible way to live. We had this little boy of ours born, everything lovely, perfect boy. We have one of our steps says something about making amends. Did you ever study that out a little bit and see how deep it is? How big of a responsibility it is? Make amends? I've got a little boy of ours laying in a crib, say, 4, 5, 6, 7 months old, laying there. And you go in and look over that crib and you look, boom! That little thing looks up and he sees something more hideous than he'll ever see in any zoo in this world. And he'll smell something he will never smell again except in all the toilets in the world stink. I shattered his nerves. He's 45 years old and he's still nervous because of me, what I did when he was a baby. How can I make amends? I can't make amends to him. The only way I can do it is to be kind to other people. Those are just one, that's one of the things, but I got lots and lots of them. I have an awful lot to do to make amends. That is beautiful home, and I have heard people say they drank for many reasons, complexes. I drank for one reason and only one reason. I lacked humility. I did not want to admit defeat. John Barleycorn could never lick me. I'd go in the morning, you bastard. You got me drunk yesterday, but I'll show you today. I won't let you lick me today. That afternoon, I was back again, fighting them again. Takes an awful lot of humility to admit defeat. Try it sometime. And just a little kid trying to have a little fight around the neighborhood. Today, you got licked in there. You know, if you go after that kid again tomorrow, you get another licking. So it took a little bit of humility on your part to stay away because you got a little bigger, a little stronger, whatever. Yeah, takes humility. In our home, which was actually beautiful, and not because it's an earthly possession, but because of a picture that's indelibly impressed upon me. Shows where I was at the peak of my pedestal of ego, the great I am. I am the best. I had the drinking this night, and I came downstairs in our living room. I was going to get some cold water. There in this living room with the buff-colored walls and the French windows and the drapes and the rose-colored sofa up against that buff-colored wall with one soft light burning, there was a lady dressed in white leaning by that sofa. "What in the world are you doing down here at this hour of the morning?" She said, "I'm praying." "Praying for what?" "You got a house, got a car, got a healthy baby boy, you got society, go to Europe when you want to. What do you want?" "I want you to stop drinking. I want you to be sober." "Don't bother about me, lady. I'll quit when I get ready." Now, that's true with everybody. The sponsor can talk to you. You can throw you in and out of St. Thomas Hospital. Your loved ones can plead with you. The doctor can frighten you. If you don't quit, you'll get cirrhosis of the liver. A cop can get you into jail and say, "If you don't quit, I'll throw the key away." You'll quit when you get ready, and not until. That's me. My wife studied me after a little more drinking, a little more trouble. In 1925, she said, "You are an alcoholic." "Lady, where in the world did you get that?" She said, "I don't know, except I've been studying you. Every time you take one drink, you want more and more and more and more, and you keep on going and going." The other night we had guests out here. She said, "I took a drink. They took a drink, and that was all. You took a drink, and you messed up everything. No more friends. Break our furniture." When we went on our vacation, she said, "I took a drink, and that was all. You took a drink, and I didn't see you for 3 weeks. You are an alcoholic. You are a sick person." I said, "That's fine, lady. Now, when I get drunk, you'll have to help me." That is, in 1925, I had admitted to myself and to another person, "I am an alcoholic." That's 10 years before anybody ever heard of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's not what it says in Alcoholics Anonymous at all. There are alcoholics in this room and in every meeting in the world, and they have admitted to themselves and to others they're alcoholics. But they're going to get drunk again and again and again until they become honest and sincere with themselves and admit they are powerless over alcohol. And that's the difference. That's the difference. Well, 1929, I found a new bootlegger, and I bought a bottle of Canadian Club from him, and it was made out of wood alcohol, and I was stricken with total blindness. And most people who said, "Jesus, God, if I go blind, surely he quit, not me." I said, "Say, God, if you're punishing me for drinking, I'll show you how to drink." And I did. Yeah, I started drinking. I lost the job, I lost the home, I lost my wife, I lost the boy. But that didn't matter. I could still drink and get drunk. There are people say, I hear them right off, "Better quit or you're going to lose your home, your divorce, your wife will divorce you." I got lost well without a home. No taxes to pay, no rent to pay, no clothes to buy. "Better quit or you're going to lose your job." I got lost well without a job. Made more money I was making while I was working. Then you don't have to quit because of a job. Doctor in the hospital said, "If you don't quit, you're going to die. You're going to die with cirrhosis of the liver or cancer." "So what?" I said, "The guy in the bed next to me, he died last night with TB. So what?" "Didn't fight me." "No." "Well, unless you want to, you can make up a reason for your quitting, and that might be helpful." Now, I have watched people die. Didn't fight me in the least. 1932, there were 13 of us stole a 5-gallon can of denatured alcohol from a gas station. We took it under a bridge and we drank it. Next morning, 11 of them dead. You stumble over a lot of dead bodies. You think, "God, you ought to quit." Not we two. I was sick and nervous. He was sick and nervous. I had to have a drink. He got us a drink. It was all right. So what? Well, there are people with worse stories than mine, but as far as I'm concerned, I have the worst story in the world because it's the one that got me to stop drinking. Your story didn't faze me in the least. Now, my story got me to stop. If your story had ought to get you to stop. So about 1932, I started to think a little bit. I am now in a state of mind that Dr. Bob labeled, some people just want to quit. Try to understand what that means for yourself. I know for me. Just want to quit. Now, I wanted to quit. I wanted to want to quit. Did I? Yeah. So I went to church. There before a congregation of 800 people, pastor prayed for me. Dear Lord, please forgive this man his sin. Well, I had done a lot of things that wasn't just right. God, I'd written an awful lot of bad checks. Charged all kinds of things to other people's accounts. Just an awful lot of things. Then he said, dear Lord, here he comes now, this drunkard. Dear Lord, please take this appetite away. Well, I went across the street to the beer garden, said the good Lord took the appetite away, and he didn't. I got drunk. Yeah, I don't know. Some people have said, and I hope they're honest about it, I never get the desire to drink anymore. The good Lord took them away from me, not me. Oh, no, not me. Well, I'm glad he didn't. Yeah, I'm glad I still get the desire to drink. Maybe that's true for well, some of you, could not me. I'm glad. Because it's a reason. Reason I'm glad, it's a reason I get the desire. Take more of the medicine that was prescribed by your sponsor. Pray a little harder in the morning. Help a few more people during the day. Attend more meetings. If I didn't get the desire to drink, I wouldn't have to take my medicine. I could go down and do something else. Maybe I'd be back drinking before too long. I don't know. I went to the other churches, made obedience to the Catholic Church and so on, and I was getting worse and worse. Round to where I was taking cures, I took a cure at 83rd Street in Cleveland, got drunk at 79th Street, so it was a good and I was strapped to a bed in St. Francis Hospital in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania for 14 days. They fed me intravenously. Good old priest down there, he liked me all right. He bought me a ticket back to Youngstown on the train, $2.39. Very nice fellow. Now, he said, when you have to have a drink or want a drink, take a glass of beer and go home. You dumb monkey. I, first place, I don't have a home, and I don't like beer. But I didn't tell him. I got down to the depot, and I got rid of his chauffeur, and I sold the ticket for $1.25 and bought 2 bottles of rubbing alcohol and drunk all over again. Now, not in front of a judge in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Now, I don't know how I got there, whether I rode a bicycle or a stone bowl. I don't know. So what the heck? Well, the county where I lived, they used to give me $45 every 3 months as a buying pension. I spent mine on boots. So they knew I used to pay more in taxes than they were giving me, so they engaged a psychiatrist for me, and I went to him for 5 so-called treatments. Beautiful office. Diplomas all over the wall. Brilliant man, yeah. I sat across the desk from them, beautiful desk, carpet on the floor, wonderful. There I was with blue shirt, pair of trousers, and tennis shoes in the winter. So he had his great big pad and his pencil, and he started. Now, when you was a little boy, did you jump up with the girls or play marbles with the boys? I didn't tell him, but I said, you dumb cluck, I played with the girls every chance I got. he asked a whole lot of silly questions. You know, it's so beautiful to be in Alcoholics Anonymous and go into another person's life. We don't want to know where you went to school. We don't want to know where you work. We don't want to know how many times you've been in jail. We don't want to know what you did as a kid. We don't want to know. Do you have a problem with alcohol? Do you? And do you honestly want to do something about it? That's it. We don't want all this bunk written down on paper like this psychiatrist. Anyhow, he went through page after page of stuff. And the fifth one, he said, well, you are a hypochondriac. You are a kleptomaniac. My alcoholic mind says you're an important son of a bee. If you're all those things, Jesus, God's entitled to get drunk. Yeah, I'm one. Anyhow, here's what he told me I had ought to do. I had ought to get something to do and work at it real hard for about an hour, and that would make me tired, and then rest, and then get a hobby. This alcoholic mind of mine, it's a shrewd thing. Didn't tell him, but if you're ever going up the main step of the town, you're going up South Main Street in Akron, see a man and woman come, you step between them. Hey, mister, give me a dollar, give me half a dollar, give me a quarter, give me a dime, give me a nickel, give me a cigarette, give me something. The last 10 people, 8 of them will spit on you, 1 of them will slap you, and 1 of them will throw you a dime. That's damned hard work. Don't think it isn't. He said, look at something, we'll make you tired. Then rest. Well, you get arrested, and you stand in front of the judge, and he said, well, you're back again, are you? Well, looks like it. Well, he'll give you 90 days out here. Then you get a long time to rest. This is my psychiatrist telling me how to quit drinking. Work hard, get tired, then rest. Then get a hobby. I had a hobby. Anytime I started by drinking, I enjoyed them. I liked them. Well, I thanked him for all of these instructions. And I said, I got a little change here. I'd like to have a glass of beer. You're an awful good fellow. The county's paying this bill. How about joining me in a glass of beer? Well, he said, it's quitting time. Sure, I'll join you in a glass of beer. He closed up his office, got in the elevator downstairs across the street, got up on a couple of stools. 2 hours, he was drunk, and I was drunk, and I said, your goddamn program don't work. And it don't work. I look back 30 years ago, we had a fellow in Youngstown, go to AA meeting every Sunday night. Every Sunday night, went to an AA meeting. Yes, sir, I got it this time. Oh, he's a smart salesman. God, he made money hand over fist. God, he made money. Smart. Good of me. Yes, sir, I know how it is. I got a hold of myself. I said, did you drunk Monday? Go to a psychiatrist on Tuesday. Spend $100 with him. By Friday, he'd be all right. And go to AA meeting on Sunday. He did that for a couple years. What good did it do him to go to a psychiatrist? What good did it do him to go to AA? That's what he'd have to answer. His answer was in AA, but he didn't want to accept it. January 28th, 1939, I was living in the basement of an apartment building, Youngstown. There was a gentleman I used to know when I was in the office, and he used to be a stock salesman out of Cleveland. I used to see him coming in our office, going up front to talk to the officials. I got acquainted with him. I introduced him to some of the bootleggers in town. He did some drinking. There are some of you people here who may remember him. His name was Jack D. Jack D. came all the way from Cleveland, spent his own money, took his own time to come down and talk to me. He was surprised when I told him I'm an alcoholic. Mister, I know that. I've known that for 18, 20 years. I've used it. I've gone in the hospital in the morning and told that in time. Jesus, God, I'm nervous and sick today. Get me a drink. He would. I'd go to the jail. I'd tell that guard where I happened to be last week, and I got a, hey, old boy, get me a drink. Jesus, God, I'm sick. I'm going to die. He would. I'm an alcoholic. I used it. Yeah. But that's not quite what we have in the Alcoholics Anonymous program. We admit we're powerless over ourselves to restore us to sanity. Then he gave me 4 cardinal principles. At that time they used to call them absolutes. Honesty, unselfishness, purity, and love. That was my instructions into the Alcoholics Anonymous program. He left me. I laid there for a couple of days, the first 2 of which I didn't know for sure whether I was going to think or die or live or what. I didn't know. Pulled my hair, tore my clothes, slobbered, sleep a little while, wake up. I had been drunk on and off for 11 months. I weighed 93 pounds. I had no teeth. I was totally blind, had a cane, and so on. Jesus, God. Well, a couple of days of that, then my mind started to function a little bit. Well, old boy, you bought this, and you paid cash for it, now suffer it out. That's true. See them laying over at St. Thomas Hospital, and they're... Not my fault you're there, mister. It's your fault. You went and bought it. I didn't. You bought it. You paid cash for it. Now suffer it out. Yeah. You think I'm going to wave a wand over your head and say, get up and go back to work? No, you bought it. You got to suffer it out. Yeah. Yeah. So as I lay there, I got able to think. Jesus, hey, you're all alone. Well, that's right. I'm all alone. There's not a person or a thing in the world knows where you are. That's right. Well, I've been alone before. Hotel rooms, boxcars, jail cell. Why? Why is this different? Because he had given me hope. And that is the thing that we are privileged to carry with us every time we're invited to another person's life. We carry with us hope. And there's hope for every alcoholic, every narcotic, if he only wants to be honest and sincere with himself. Nobody can instill that in you. You have to do it yourself. So, then I had ought to develop a belief in a power greater than myself, and that drove me up the wall because, Jesus, Al Capone, go out and shoot a couple of people, go to church, put $100 in their kitty. My dad would pray at the table and then cheat in his business. Ah. What the heck's this rush? But I'm drunk. I'm in an awful mess. And he looks awful good. Yeah, he's awful good. He's back working. He's wonderful, huh? Yeah. But if you remember, Jack Darrow had what we call in the most of spiritual experience of the telephone booth in Buffalo, New York. That didn't come to me, no, no. As I lay there, and my mind started to function a little bit. I said I didn't have a drinking problem, but I had a thinking problem. I thought myself into every drunk I was ever on. I used to be working, making money. I used to love to go to Ohio State and see old Chick Harley play football, 1917, along in there. I used to love to go out to South Bend, Notre Dame, and see the Four Horsemen play football. Along about Wednesday, I'd get a couple of quarts. By Thursday, they'd be gone, and by Friday, I'd be drunk. I'd get out to a football game, and I didn't know whether I was playing tiddlywinks or what I was doing. It took me 3 days to think myself into that drunk. Yeah. And I have to think myself sober, too. Well, now, I had no home to go to, no job, no income of any kind. Nothing but a white cane. Well, they took away my blind pension. I used to sell a magazine now and then to make a bite to eat. When I started out into the world, I became honestly, sincerely grateful for the privilege of being an alcoholic, for the privilege of being invited into the Alcoholics Anonymous program, for the privilege of having a man love me enough to come 60 miles away and take his time and his money. So my Alcoholics Anonymous program was one of gratitude. Thankful. So every hour on the hour I stopped in my mind and I said, thank you. Now I don't know if I'm thanking God or angels or heaven or hell, I don't know. But I just say thank you. I hear a whistle blow, I say thank you. I hear a clock time, I say thank you. And I went along through life doing that, sold a few magazines, made a bite to eat now and then. I was there about 8 weeks and I had a little meeting. And six alcoholics and four women get together at the house. These people had jobs, they had home, they had income, they had cars, they had good bodies, everything. I went. They talked a little bit about the Oxford movement, a little bit about Dr. Bob and Bill and a few things like that, and then they talked a little bit about drinking, and then they closed with the Lord's Prayer. And then this fellow in whose home this meeting was being held, he come over to me and he said, "I want to tell you something." I said, "Yep." He said, "You're half blind old bastards. You got no more intentions to keep us over than the man on the moon. The only reason you're coming up here is to get acquainted with these people so we could beg. Now the thing for you to do is stay the hell away." That was my introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm thankful for that. I went back to that mattress I laid there, and I said, "I'm going to get drunk, and I'm going to kill that bastard." "No, I won't. I'm going to kill his wife, and I'm going to kill him." "No, I won't. I'm going to kill all those damn babies." Because here I am down at the bottom, and they don't want me. Society don't want me. So I said, "No. No, the thing for you to do is to go there and go there regular, and don't take any help from any of them." By the grace of God, that's what I've done. I stood on the street corner 2 or 3 days at a time, and they'd go past and they'd say, "Hello, hello." I wouldn't ask one of them for a nickel. I wouldn't ask them for a cup of coffee. I'll die here on this street corner before I do. I never have. Well, I was dry 18 months before I got a job. I got a job for the help of the judge who used to put me in jail. I worked for the state about 30 years. I was dry 5 years before I was reunited with my wife and boy. Now, the simplicity of the Alcoholics Anonymous program that I was taught by Dr. Bob a lot of times, and his wife Ann, I loved her. A lot of things about this. Bill Wilson. Some of the things that have been so solid in my AA life. Dr. Bob, he always wanted to drink. Body. But his mind says, "No. Let's keep this simple. Don't mouse it up. Grow by attraction and not promotion." We don't have to sober up the world. And we never will. And nobody else ever will. We don't. Can't. No. Don't run around with a sandwich sign on. "Hey, will you give me a job? I'm in AA." Get out. Now, grow by attraction and not promotion. Bill Wilson had an emotional spiritual experience in Dr. Silver's hospital in New York where something said to him, "You can keep dry, not sober, you can keep dry 24 hours at a time by helping your fellow man." He started on it to the world to do that by carrying a bottle with him. Give a drink to the guy so he could talk to him. He did that for 6 months. And he was not successful. And he was discouraged. He went to his home with little wife Lois, now living in a little apartment. One day lived in a well home provided by a millionaire, now down to a little apartment. She was an $18 a week clerk in an ice store. He was discouraged. She said, "Well, Bill, bring them into the house and let's see what we can do with them." Now, that don't mean a house made of brick and stone or wood. It means you take them into your heart. When you get the opportunity to go and call on somebody, first the most important thing you have ought to do if you want to be successful is to do like Dr. Bob and Bill did when they contacted Bill Dean. They're laying in the hospital in Akron City Hospital, East Market Street. They talked to him, and he was drunk. Talked to him some more, and he drunk. Dr. Bob would give him some tomato juice and charcoal, and talked to him some more, he was drunk. 2 o'clock in the morning, he got so he could think and he could listen, and they said, "Do you honestly want to do something about your alcoholic problem?" "Yes, I do." "Will you do anything in this world to keep away from it and drink?" "Yes, I will." Two great big men. One a physician, a college graduate, medical man. Another one, successful businessman, a college graduate in commerce and finance. Both had been in the throes of alcohol. Two great big men said, "Let's pray about it." There in that hospital bed, they prayed with Bill. That's why we have Alcoholics Anonymous. Not because of these pictures you see on TV. Not because of the magazine article. No, because it was built on a firm foundation. And don't ever allow anybody to take that away from you. It's possible for AA to be hurt from within, never from out, hurt within. So, Bill Wilson, who was the promoter type, had a few people, alright, so went to the Rockefeller Foundation, and he said, "We have a way of life now, and it is helping people with their drink problem." They had enough people to prove it. Rockefeller Foundation said, "Well, you come back in a little while, 3 months or so, and we'll see if we can well help you out financially." And went back in 3 months. "Yes, that's true. You have a wonderful program. Simple enough for people to understand. And it is doing good. But there'll be no money for you." Bill was brokenhearted. Said, "Well, it would be good for us to give you $100 million and you build hospitals all over the country, dry up these drunks. It would be good for us to give you $50 million, buy a lot of books, literature and so on. That would be good. But the good is the enemy of the best. Remember that as long as you're in Alcoholics Anonymous. The good is the enemy of the best. That the best is for you to do what you're doing. Deprive yourself of some time, some of your personal possessions, above all, your own interest in trying to help your fellow man." But Bill Wilson was so discouraged. Lois said, "Well, Bill, bring him into the house. That means you take him into your heart." That's why Alcoholics Anonymous is as strong as it is. Most powerful thing in this world. We're doing things that nobody else has ever been able to do. Churches, hospitals, unions, psychologists, they haven't been able to. Here we are. Marvelous piece of work. Nobody knows. Nobody knows how many people have been helped by Alcoholics Anonymous. I know in our vicinity of Canton Area Alliance, I could take time and name over 100 people that got their help in Alcoholics Anonymous and they don't attend meetings anymore. Well, maybe that's all right for them, but it's true. So there are... I suppose there's 1 million people over the country that got their help through Alcoholics Anonymous and don't attend a meeting or anything anymore. Well, that's their business. Well, anyhow. What is it I want in this world? I want to learn to be sober. And I do that by continually practicing the simple principles of the Alcoholics Anonymous. Yeah. I am first exceedingly grateful, thankful, that the hospitals I went to and the so-called medication I have taken didn't work. I am exceedingly thankful that the threats that people gave me, promises I made, didn't work. I'm thankful that the religion I was introduced to, all faith, Catholic, Protestant, Christian, Science, Buddhist, didn't work. I'm thankful. I'm thankful that the psychologist and psychiatrist, the nurse triple program didn't work. I'm so thankful they didn't work. Why? Well, I had to suffer a little more. Go through a little more hell and come over here and meet the grandest people in this world. These are people you learn to love, not only for what they are, but for what you are when you're with them. Can you review back a little bit in your mind and see somebody that you know going down the street and you say, "Hi, Joe." A little bit later, you both got into Alcoholics Anonymous, and you're trying to live it. See the same fellow going down the street? "Hello, Joe. Oh, hello, how are you? Well, not too awful good, but what's the trouble? Let's go in and get a cup of coffee and talk about it. These are the people you learn to love. We're here because our sponsor loved us, and for no other reason. He didn't do it to build up his admiration. God, if he did, all he'd have to do is get drunk and stand up on the public square on his head. Yeah, we're here because your sponsor loves you. These are the people you learn to love, not only for what they are making of themselves, but for what they are helping to make of you. There's a beautiful girl I know in the northern part of Stark County. Her father was a very successful steel man. He used to give her a little spoonful of alcohol when she'd have a cold as a little tot. She went on up to high school. Once in a while, some of the girls would have a martini or something. She might taste one, but that's all. She went to Vassar and was a good student. And the girls there used to have their eyeballs and their martini. Oh, once in a while, maybe once a year, she'd take one. That's all, you know. After her graduation, very successful in every way, she got married to a very successful man, also in the steel business, a lovely home. They had two fine children. Husband used to entertain and have some drinks around. She didn't bother. No, she didn't bother. They drank some, you know, it was always there, big bar in the basement and so on. These two little youngsters growing up, they got in school. Some unknown reason, she started to drink, this lady. She had been introduced to alcohol many years ago. Here she started to drink. And she drank more, and she drank more, and she drank more. It got bad. Kids would come home from school, and then she'd be laying on the floor drunk. Caused her husband an awful lot of anguish. He was worried sick. He engaged the doctor, but the doctor couldn't help her. He'd give her a shot or something. No more of it. Went to psychiatrist. Big treatment. Big money. Go home and pretty soon get drunk again. Couple years of this. She walked out. She walked out of a home, security, income, lover, family, children. She walked out. 2 months had gone by. There was a lady in Alcoholics Anonymous found her. Yes, she was down along the railroad track. Same dress on when she left. Her hair hadn't been combed for months. No lipstick, no rouge. She looked like a skeleton. This lady said, there is a way. There is a way if you want to be honest with yourself. If you want to be sincere. She did accept the Alcoholics Anonymous way of life. And she stands before a group such as this. Yes, I am an alcoholic. And I have admitted I am powerless over alcohol. And with your help and the help of my understanding of a higher power, I have regained my self-respect. I have returned with my family. But above all, I have a way to be happy, peaceful, and contented. Now, when that happens, don't that do something to you? These are the people you learn to love, not only for what they are, but for what you are when you're with them. That's why Alcoholics Anonymous is doing things that the other groups can't do. See, if I would have been sobered up by a psychiatrist, I'd have quit drinking. That's all. I wouldn't have to be honest anymore. No, I wouldn't have to be honest. I can connive, I can rationalize, and so on. My boss was a former probate judge in Ravenna. He had gone to school as an observer way back in 1930. Now, in this work I was in, we used to travel. There's 230 in a department. They travel over and above the state, and you have to turn in an expense account every 2 weeks. Bus fare here and there, meals and so on, and telephone, postage, whatever. And the clerks down there in Columbus, they'd get these and they'd go over them. And they'd go over them with a fine-tooth comb. Boy, oh boy, if you're trying to... My boss
But the judge out of Ravenna, who had gone to some AA over there in Akron, King's School, he said, you don't have to examine Norm. He's in AA. Honesty. Honesty. When I went to church, they didn't teach me honesty. No, I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've had the privilege of talking to schools a lot up around. High schools around through here. There's a couple of young ladies that were juniors in this high school, and they were going to take the midterm examination. They were about to study in the in the library. And they, one girl said that. I know where to get a copy of that examination. We can get it, you know, and you and I can study it. And then we can get a good grade, huh? The other girl says, no. I don't want you to get that examination. My parents are in AA. And they teach us honesty in our family. I don't want you to steal that examination. Those two girls got the highest grade in that test. They didn't steal. When the principal of our school told me about 3 months later that they had put that story in their paper, school paper. Over one-third of those kids are practicing honesty in that school all because of Alcoholics Anonymous. I know a young man down in our camp area, and he was a salesman for one of the companies, and he wanted to transfer employers. New employer says, yes, sir, we'd love to have you. Done a good job as a salesman around, and everybody knows it. We'd love to have you, yeah. And this fellow said, I will go with your company, but I will not butter anybody's hand. I will never put any money under the table to get another order. Boss said, you must be an AA. He said, yes, I am. Honest. Honesty. Yes. Unselfishness. I have some of the grandest people in this world as my friends. I can't drive a car, but they're willing to go by us all the road. Just either to help themselves or to help me, but I'm grateful. Unselfish. Yes. And the wonderful thing about life is to learn to love each other. Rather than to knife each other the way we used to do. I have a pretty good friend. I had something to do with him getting into Alcoholics Anonymous some 25 years ago out in the Midwest. Very brilliant man, too. Not so well trained, but brilliant. Dried up good. Good AA. Made a wonderful appearance. He got in politics. He ran for United States Senator, and he was elected. Oh, boy, by what they call landslide. Some people thought he ran for president. Alcoholics Anonymous. That was instilled in him. Honesty. He should have run last November, but he said, no. No, he said, I can't keep sober with that bunch of dishonest people. No more politics for him. It says, are you willing to do anything in order to gain and retain your sobriety? Yeah. Are you willing? And that's what he did. He could have run, got a good job, senator, $50,000-$60,000 a year, huh? No. No, I can't keep sober. So he quit his job. That has an awful lot to do with our way of life. And my way of looking at myself, the way I've studied myself, I have decided that there is an awful big difference between being in AA and having AA in you. I want to get more AA in me than just going in AA. And if we go through life taken the medicine that was prescribed, you'll be able to look at yourself like other people are looking at you. You see, I would rather see a sermon than hear one any day. I would rather one would walk with me than merely tell the way. The eyes are better pupil and more willing than the ear. Fine counsel is confusing, but example's always clear. The best of all the preachers are the men who live their creeds. For to see good, put into action, is what everybody needs. Thank you for the privilege of visiting with you. If you have received any good from anything I may have said or done, don't give me any credit for it. But when you're all alone, that is tonight or tomorrow, give thanks to your understanding of a higher power.